the communications that we heard were related by tuning our high frequency radio to the control of the fence headquarters downtown and constituted the first information concerning the
reaction throughout this period. Now, when I say for practical purposes, this doesn't mean that no panic occurred. But it did mean that no significant amount of it occurred, which could either cause hazard to individual lives, person panicking, or disruption of transportation or rescue efforts, or general pattern of setting up the emergency facilities. We tried to define panic reactions as those including both the blind running, which we usually think of, and also the freezing and immobility. For instance, you associate this with the problem of getting horses out of the stable when they're fired on. Now, this could easily have happened in a number of places. For instance, in the Turnington homes, which went over the bluff, if there had been a tendency to freeze and condition in many of these houses, there could have been considerable, at least, injury or exposure. But the nearest can be determined, both children and the group who were still out there at the time, they were mainly women, men not having come home by and large, mobilized themselves rather rapidly and got out of these dwellings. And there were some considerable difficulties because of the new nature of the terrain, which was suddenly up and down and sideways, instead of level. Again, the other type of panic that occurred for this section, attempt to run might easily have led them to begin that, which, as far as we know, did not happen, at least by all our accounts. Now, we describe this fact of this lack of immediate panic to a number of things. I suspect one of them, which probably not able to document, but I think it's probably of some value, is that people by and large are totally ignorant about earthquakes and have had no previous experience with something this size, and therefore don't immediately react unless they happen to be in a setting which is obviously in considerable danger. This, of course, is true especially people who couldn't see what was going on, and if they couldn't see any immediate damage, reaction. This is my own case. We didn't take in for some time how much devastation there was. Now, within the next 24 hours at the Providence Hospital, which was essentially the carrying station for all the emergency victims of the earthquake in the Anchorage area, except for some few who were able to get to the Navy Hospital and to some extent the military. And recall the military hospital was also evacuated. I don't believe that we knowingly admitted anyone because of a primary psychiatric condition. There were a number of people who came in with minor injuries and major complaints. These were usually able to be settled with some reassurance and medication. Very few people came in without some kind of physical injury, even though it might be minor. Apparently, not feeling that their emotional reactions were worthwhile bringing them to the hospital. But as a matter of fact, even some people with major physical injuries didn't come. We had at least one man with a broken leg who didn't come in for 24 hours because he felt that people who were worse injured ought to come first. Which may be the most reaction at all. So we can say then that for our immediate practical purposes, that the psychological reaction, which would have been most deleterious, that of panic, didn't occur. And the opposite, by and large, did occur, that people immediately mobilized what type of survival gear they had and got vigorously to work. Now, this is a psychological reaction that Dr. Parker will talk about shortly. But this phase, and I'm speaking at this point of the Yankee area, carried through most of the first 2 to 4 days, by which time most of the utilities were back in function to some degree at least, or if an individual home wasn't yet heated, they had friends who did have a home that was heated, and everyone was able to, by that time, say things had been counted and they were back together again. Joe, would you like to discuss about the same period in Seward?
Nor but either one.
I think that
Thank you. Just the first.
Yeah, let's stick to the first few days right now.
In Kodiak, the situation was a little bit different to the sewer. You locked it up and record, and you also kind of tied it. Actually, I think six were counted at the mail station. Six tsunamis, of which three were victims. The interesting thing as far as the initial reaction on the part of people to the earthquake, myself included, was that it was a very terrifying thing. And yet, I think most of us just stood still. I'm sure I did what everyone else did, just stayed in one spot and got onto the car. And no one panicked at this point, no one at all. After the shaking ceased, and I had a chance to call the patients in the hospital, one of them was very seriously ill, and he had possibly got a turn to that. I thought that if you got knees around you, you don't understand. But after the shaking ceased, everyone went back to one of us and one activity, which is rather surprising. There were two people now who knew about the fact that thyroid saw records. These people needed to be engaged in preparation for thyroid. But I couldn't tell you if people did not do this. One group of ladies had a bowling session scheduled. The bowling alley was right down the waterfront from the basement of what was to ultimately have been the new health stuff. And so this was actually below our normal high tides, the level of bowling alley. 35 ladies showed up about 10 to 15 minutes after the quake, and there was nothing wrong with it. They proceeded to bowl. And some of the ladies, you all think that question, who might be with the rent? And one of the guys is very high in the law, and one of the ladies is the law. And that, oh, one of them is out, and they did. By the time, the water was flowing out the west. But here, and then all spent the night, ACS, with
24 hours in Anchorage, we had something over 200 and some patients seen at Providence Hospital. And I think our total mortality rate of that list was about 7 or 8. Again, our district is reversed. Now, one aspect of this, which sometimes can be wondered about, is what is the effect of something like this on people who are already severely mentally ill, and whether from illness or retardation or whatever. I think maybe Dr. Bowman could give us his impressions about both his staff and his patients during this period.
At the last Psychiatric Institute, I pointed out that the past capacity for 229 patients is very new building, very solid deal. But the top stories that I have been handed, they're supposed to be on both wings tomorrow. I was at it and in the main center, they one more story added. Therefore, we have a type of construction with this.
Yeah.
members noticed there was water coming down floors and so forth. We didn't know that's supposed to happen, this was a pack of them. Just a little bit of that in the bar, and so we got flooding in our top floor. And some of it went down, but this was quickly fixed by the engineering group. Telephones, of course, are off immediately, and our regular electricity was on. But we had an emergency system, which was put in play, which took care of special spots and also occasional lights pretty much all over the hospital, so we were not the complete blackness. Our names are broken, so our water supply was out of commission. And the water from the heating tanks that we had to be turned off because it was all out of money. We had to run out of electricity. So we did not do that. Now, the patients were more or less taken back to their wards. I don't know. And we couldn't take our patients back to the top floor because there was soap there. So we carried some beds down and various things. The nurses very quickly had the patients all working because everyone knows. The great thing to do is have some people who can present a calm demeanor, a good example, and keep the other persons busy. Because if you're busy doing something that you feel is useful and really getting some satisfaction from it, you aren't just sitting there wondering, is there another shop coming? If that's what I do, or there isn't anything I can do. Work into a pack. So they got the beds down and then they got them all set up and then one nurse decided that this wouldn't be satisfactory this way, so she got the patients to move them around in a bigger position and this went on 3 or 4 times and everybody was working together. Snow in the buckets, which were set down on the floor, and which melted slowly, and we used those for flushing the great interest.
University. I believe that the first responses to the situation were responses which tended to reduce the problems confronting the individual within his capability, his scope, his ability to cope. This is, of course, obviously self-preserving. To this extent, there are many of these individual anecdotes reflect what I call a subjective sort of a limitation of self-localization. A feeling, for example, that if you felt this earthquake badly in Mountain View, it was just right there where you felt it, and nobody else was bothered. It was a limitation still. There was a good bit of loss of time. Time as a referential framework was kind of lost in its first 24 hours. Well, it was this kind of limitation which were immediate responses. Then there were immediate efforts which came out of this preservation of integrity. Now, in the best sense, we are also extensions of ourselves to others, and particularly those who are close to us. And we notice in almost all the anecdotal reports, the very first reactions were towards one's love objects, people that were close to one. Fortunately, Anchorage being a small area, this could be accomplished in a relatively short period of time, geographically, with a restricted area. So usually, with the and dependence on the automobile, the fact that the road communication, although it was clogged, was not shut off, allowed people to move. Even those who had duties were precluded actually physically going and seeing their people reported an urge to find out, an urge to move towards them. And of course, this was reflected immediately after the radio station. One of the stations was able to get back on a very short time on standby power, and this was reflected in the constant flood of messages within the 24 first hours there of trying to get in touch with their people. So there was this movement towards others. After this immediate attention to one's own loved ones and making sure that they were all right or trying to find them, in most cases, in many cases, then there was a feeling of what can I do, a sort of service to others kind of business. Within that first couple of hours after the quake, at least in the Spinard area, which contains many small businesses, there was just as if a decision had been made, had been reached and made, there was no price raising, there was no gouging, there was voluntary limitation of purchases, and there was very little attempt toward it reported by, on the part of the merchants. If, I don't think symptoms is the right word. It's a word used in our schema in the paper in the medical journal, but I don't think it's the right word, and I don't know what other word to use, so maybe something like phenomena. My feeling is that if something big happens, you should darn well respond to it. Now, this is the biggest earthquake of the century and the biggest in North American history. So it was worth a response. You know, why sit and shrug your shoulders? It was worth it. So the first feelings were feelings of anxiety, excitement, and some fear. As Dr. Langen pointed out, many people did not know just exactly what was going on. Now, some of us are fairly familiar with mild tremors in Alaska all the time. And so, you know, the first response to a lot of things, well, we're having another one of those, but this one just didn't stop. As parenthetically, in response to what Dr. Bowman was saying about the intensity, we found also among our contacts, which are fairly extensive, that people developed a very precise ability to judge the Richter scale from their subjective impressions. You'd feel one of these aftershocks in the first 3 or 4 weeks and say, well, that's about a 5. A paper would come out, it would be a 5 or 5.3 or 5.5. And I think this is this is a cognitive, partly, at least partly cognitive and partly conscious, and partly a learned response, which is also self-preservative. Because if you're pretty accurate at gauging the intensity of the quake, it's going to have an effect on a lot of your behavior. You say, oh boy, this is over 8. It's only 5. There's another little thing that a lot of anchorageites have developed, and this comes out of modern internal interior decorating. And there's lots of dangling lights in these modern things here. And so the best check, the gross seismograph of the anchorage area, if you feel a shake and you're not sure it's your own inner ear, you look at your hanging light fixture, and if it's moving, it's a tremor. And if it's not moving, it's you. After this, as a result of this anxiety in the first phase, and I think we can grossly lump it under that, there were some physiological responses to the anxiety. This included tremor, either fine or gross, visceral symptoms, impairment of digestion, loss of appetite, diarrhea, some cases of nausea and vomiting. There was always some impulse to flight, flight being a normative, self-preservative response. There was also, outside of this concern for others, there was another self-protective thing which went on, and that was a sort of a relative depersonalization, a kind of putting the I part of me aside, walling it off a little bit, kind of preserving it for future reference, and going about your business. We think we saw this for at least the first 2 or 3 days of the equation. One of the things we're very sure comes out of this, and it's come out of other reports of catastrophes, and it's come out of the work that, for example, the civil defense people have done, is that there is a great thirst to fill the vacuum of ignorance exists at a time like this. A thirst for knowledge. This is something which we must acknowledge and we must respond to. Incidentally, there was a good bit of feeling came out of this, that word civil defense, which has certain connotations regarding bombing, atomic bombs, and that sort of thing, ought to be dropped, and something about disaster defense or catastrophe coping or something we substitute for that particular word. As long as there is structure and information within the community, there is a great deal of guarding against any overt pathological anxiety reactions. So that the radio, when it came back on, came back under the auspices of civil defense, and all announcements were prefaced by their source and their official nature. And I doubt that there is any place in the world in a comparable 36 to 48, 60-hour period where transistor radios were so extensively, widely, and continuously in use. It was in these areas during its first hour. If this thirst for knowledge is satisfied, we feel very sure that it mitigates against any untoward responses. It helps the individual a very great deal. We try to fill in the gaps in our knowledge. And we feel also that if those gaps are not filled, and if the official people and the community leaders do not satisfy this very innate need, then we get the sort of stuff which comes about rumor. And rumor can be very destructive in this situation. For example, one workman saw the mannequins from the penny store being carried out. They numbered about 36, and I forgot the exact count, but he counted them. And he was convinced these these were all bodies. And he spread this around. And it was necessary for some very intense, repeated announcements to be made that there were no further casualties. You see, it's completely illogical to assume that the community leaders could benefit in any foreseeable way by the concealment of the amount of casualties in the quake. And yet, for the first few days, this was a repeated thing. This thirst for knowledge is filled in the vacuum, must continue. It seemed, I think, very clear in the pathology of the advanced chronic alcoholic syndromes, for example, where the individual loses a lot of his immediate recall and makes up things because he can't stand to have this absence of knowing what happened. And to a lesser extent, this sort of thing applies here. During the first few hours, most anecdotal reports revealed a tendency to get together with other people. Now, there are all sorts of rationalizations for this. We haven't got any heat, it's easier if we're around one fireplace and we only have to split wood at one fireplace. Why not cool our food, you know? We've got two alcohol burners and we can cook a big pot of stew or beans or something, and it's easy. But we do feel that within the first 2 days, there was a good bit of this tendency of people who want to get together, to cluster together in more than one family group. Children in particular, not only wanted to be with their own family group, and they wanted also to be with other groups. There was either an impairment or a heightened appreciation of reality we detected. This impairment in terms of limitation of scope or heightened appreciation in the observation of detail and a more outstanding alertness than we normally possess. There's a good bit of reporting in this anecdotal kind of stuff which reveals this heightened appreciation of the reality. Later on, there was reported, at least in my sample, and again I say this is with college students, so my college students differ from Bill's quite a bit, because it's an evening school and they age range from the teens up to the 60s. There was, in about a third of the anecdotal reports, a feeling of guilt at being lucky. You know, why am I getting off so well when so many people were hurt so badly? The depression we'll mention just a minute, and it came later on. Overlapping all of these above phenomena were, in the later stages, after the first few hours, excessive fatigue as one. Now, many people, and I don't think it's been pointed out enough, the housewives in particular had a very difficult time. Normal housekeeping was an impossibility, and everything that you did was tripled or quadrupled in difficulty. You had to haul water, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a lot of physical fatigue. But in addition to this, there was a great deal of fatigue, which we think was psychogenic in origin. There were changes in eating and drinking patterns. Either heavy eaters stopped eating for a while, and heavy drinkers stopped drinking for a while, and vice versa. I'm not saying that they were there's any particular pattern, just that there were reported in these anecdotes, you know, considerable changes in eating and drinking patterns, and an exquisite sensitivity to environmental influence. This is a fancy way of saying every time there's a tremor to jump, there is a very great sensitivity. Although there is this protective thing, which I mentioned, of being able to judge what kind of intensity of the quake is. In terms of temporal evolution, you feel at first the anxiety arose out of a feeling of helplessness. There were a lot of reports of things like this. Please God, make it stop. This is what's going on. You're 4 minutes in an earthquake over 8 on a Richter scale is an eternity. So you hear him it stop. Or, Daddy, make that thing stop. This sort of thing. There's this feeling of helplessness which led to anxiety. In certain cases, according, I think, both to the psychological and physiological predisposition of the organism involved, there were symptoms arising directly from the anxiety. For example, an exacerbation of gastrointestinal symptoms might be an example, arising directly out of the anxiety. However, in many cases, anxiety continued to exist, was dealt with as best as possible, but of course was not resolved, and led into feelings of anger. And there's considerable report in the anecdotes of anger. Basically, the anger was directed at the earthquake, but that's an awfully intangible thing to direct anger at. Some of the anecdotes report anger at God, being angry at God for either causing this or permitting it to happen. This isn't very satisfying either. So these angry feelings were vague at first, but, and of course, resulted in some expression, and we feel this expression was either outward or inward. If it was outward, it was some form of aggressive response. If it was inward, it was a depressive response. And there was a pretty uniform feeling of depression, temporarily and angry, we felt about 3 weeks or so, and lasting for possibly up to 2 weeks, a generalized depression in the community. And this is inwardly directed anger. When I visited Seward sometime later, I felt that this depression had not set in the same way or temporarily in the same sequence. And I don't think it did with Valdez or Kodiak either. Now, in this outward-directed aggression, if it was expressed as destructive aggression and hostility, it often led to such things as projection, putting the blame on other people. Why doesn't that lousy gas company get on the ball and do something? Or why didn't the city of Anchorage do this or that and anything, or how come this or how come that? A lot of irritability, a lot of criticism, a lot of violent outbursts. Many of these were interpersonal outbursts, either in a marital situation, in a business situation, other interpersonal relationships, and in which the aggression and hostility expressed was more than was needed, more than was called for in the real situation. Constructively, this aggression, and I think this was in the majority of cases, was channeled into such things as the determination to rebuild participation and planning and working and so forth, and sort of a damn the earthquake full speed ahead kind of feeling many people had. This was a wonderful feeling. It's wonderful to participate in it. In the course of human conduct, however, it only lasted about a month or so. And we have since seen all the goodwill and fellowship and cooperation being dissipated over the last 5 months. Thank you.
I base the part on what we observed in our practice and what we were able to determine from other physicians and psychiatrists, and also based on what Dr. Parker just discussed, we made an attempt to predict, these in general terms, what tests might come up. For one thing, based on our initial observations, we felt that probably we would not have any great surge of psychological categories. Even later on, that is that in the first few weeks. The ones we did observe were exaggeration of some of these phenomena that Dr. Parker had spoken of, in that some of them, for instance, in an attempt to separate
themselves from the disaster. Of course, a number of people actually did this geographically by getting off plane and flying away. This one was possible for everybody, and others it looks like one. I think probably the commonest method of doing this, after the initial phase, was excessive sleepiness. Now, this is not to be computed to fatigue, as you mentioned, because this was after the excessively stressful working period was over. And this was just a matter of the fatigue. People didn't show up for work because they overslept, or they might sleep all day. Some of the most pronounced ones, those which appeared either as a primitive collective reaction, or some things that put on as schizophrenic in their appearance. A person transporting himself, in one case, to another planet. And he became, I think, either a Venusian or a Martian for a while. Now, presumably those things were not really written at the time. Another woman transported herself into mythology, and she became the goddess Juno. Now, this practice system we felt had a double significance. Not only was she removing herself from the scene of the crime, but she was also turning herself into a being which could not have this happen to her. Now, the reactions lasted a very length of time, depending on the person. But I think that the majority of this type of phenomenon did not exceed 1 to 2 weeks, unless it turned into an actual schizophrenic reaction, in which case we have to question if the earthquake caused it, although it might have triggered it. Now, on the community-wide basis, based on these symptoms that we wrote in, we felt that there would probably be a few phases which of reaction during the ensuing months, probably in a different sequence in different communities because of their own, again, individual community effects. For instance, I don't know if I should encourage you to agree with me, but my own feeling about this is that Kodiak, having already been an island, react in a different way than Seward, which for practical transportation purposes suddenly became an island. The people of Balinese were even more physical chatter because the whole community seems to be evacuated. Therefore, although perhaps similar reactions occurred, I'm sure that their temporal evolution was different. So what we attempt to predict was largely on the basis of anchoring, which we were most closely associated with, and had a larger population to observe. This period of aggression, which was either positive or negative, and either negative, either outward or inward, showed itself pretty clearly within the next 5 weeks or so, and lasted a while. And the city council really got a rough time during this period, as well as a few other places, a number of the federal officials. It's interesting that, as far as I know, the military didn't receive a great deal of this. This is perhaps based on many reasons, but for one thing, the military was not obviously making the rules, or as the city council appeared. There was another outburst of rumors several weeks after the earthquake, and I think partly this was because the flow of information, of official information, had let down, and the usual red tape had come over again. For instance, at one point, the fourth avenue slide, their apartment was gassed for a while. And it very quickly got around that this smell was out of bodies, which again the city had concealed. The reaction to the aftershocks produced a certain number of profits and savings. And we thought it would happen so frequently, it was almost inevitable that he would predict one or more right on the nose. So this got a certain amount of credibility. And with everyone around town, this I don't think caused any serious problem, but it was interesting. The number of people said, now this fellow knows when the big one really was hit, and the enemy's really going to come. Again, we discussed this at time with the civil defense people and the immigration people, and managed to get the information from them. Now, because of the nature of a modern civilization, which maybe has changed significantly since the San Francisco quake, a lot of the reconstruction, rebuilding, especially in Alaska, has to do both publicly and privately with federal and state agencies and various federations. Now, therefore, this is the unknown factor which fed into the psychological reaction. Because for quite a while, for instance, in Seward, there's an entire city behind us and a mountain about the river that we built. There was a long discussion, which some of you may know, and well, I guess the answer is resolved now, but as of yesterday morning, there's still some questions about it, as to what was going to be done about mortgages on houses that had been destroyed. The question of public utilities became a problem of city council, district engineer, and their various channels. Attempts to get information in many of these areas was very frustrating, and the people who were most concerned began again to develop these anger reactions, overreactions. Now we felt that dependent to some extent on what happened in these communities in the way of reconstruction and decisions, which were out of their power, being on these governmental levels, as to whether in a period of 5, 6, 8 months we would have another episode or group of more severe depressions. Well, so far, and this is 5 months, we have not seen a marked upsurge of depression, although we have seen quite a number of them. But they have not been as severe as we thought they might be. Now, some of the major things have been resolved at this point, and we will have to speculate not only for the next 3 or 4 months, if they have been resolved sufficiently to people to reassure people so that they will go on and function. One of the problems that gives us is that we find it quite difficult to get more than a few scattered samplings is what the reaction would be of the people who left the community immediately after the earthquake. In this case, I obviously don't mean Valdez because they had to leave. But people will say from Anchorage, who primarily from fear or something else, went outside within the next week or so, and then returned later on. Well, we didn't see enough of these people before they went to know just what all their motivations were. But we did see a few of them. And the few that we did see who were very anxious, very concerned, had to leave. Within a few sessions in most cases, changed their mind on this, especially if it was going to affect a career or children or something like that. There have been a few